Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome, everyone, to another special episode of Mevy Meta. Oh, wait a minute. We're back to normal. This is Brainstorm Brewery, episode number 59. We love our people there from Heavy Meta, but, you know, got to get it back to the roots, get to the financials, and how you guys doing? How's your recovery from Vegas been going?
It was really hard to sit down and write articles this week.
No, that first one when we got back last week was hard. After we drove 19 hours needing to do one the next day, that was the tough one to write.
Yeah.
It's tough to be responsible, do stuff around the house, get some work done, right? Get some cards listed. It's tough to drive to the post office when all I wanted to do was just still be on vacation.
Yeah, me too. I was like literally at home trying to drink a couple beers, trying to catch the feeling again. I was like, yeah, no, it is over. Vegas is done.
I don't know if there will ever be another GP like that.
Modern Masters 2. GP Vegas.
I think there will be more people there, but I don't think it will be the same. I think I will still prefer this.
No, I mean, it seems like this was such a lightning in a bottle type of moment that it's going to be hard to duplicate.
I disagree. I think because it got hit out the ballpark so hard, I think that if they did were to do it again in Vegas, I think people just based off the hype of how good it was the first time and the fact that the originals would know how to do it better the second time, I think that it might actually be an even bigger event.
I think that's all true. Like, I think they definitely will probably do it again. It'll be a big deal, but it's just going to be difficult to recapture that feeling of it being the first time and, you know, us meeting.
And that's what I was saying. I think it'll be bigger next time, but I don't think it'll be the same feeling.
True.
I mean, they did Woodstock, or they did, you know, Woodstock type events for forever too, and, just, you know, never quite the same.
So yeah, like, Like my concerts that I did, the Blunt World ones, like our first one that we did was probably the best one, even though the last one was probably the most successful one financially and everything. But the first one, like the magic is just, you can't capture it otherwise. So yeah, I understand what you're saying. So, you know, I'm glad
Let's
we were there.
Let's not talk intangibles on this podcast. The most financially successful one is the best one, or we're not a very good finance podcast.
See.
Let's not talk about our feelings. Let's talk about what makes money.
I disagree. Sometimes it ain't about the money, you know, like, cause I personally had to give up 10 days of work so I could go to Vegas. And that was like the dagger of daggers. Cause it was like 12 hour days. So, you know, I could put the time value of money onto Vegas and really feel bad about it because I didn't make as much, but you know, it's the times and the good times that we had there that count more than whatever the money would have been.
Yeah. Like everyone who hung out at that house, I will absolutely. Like when I see those people at events, I mean, whether you were friends or not before, you kind of walked away from that.
Well, when Marcel and I start our food truck, we will have plenty of financial backers because they tasted Marcel's barbecuing.
It's true.
That was actually a poor performance.
Can we get a Wizard sponsored cart or truck at each of these events now at Grand Prix?
That's a good idea. We'll just follow the Grand Prix and the pros around.
Yeah. Speaking of following around Grand Prix and pros, you know, that little, you know, doing good on it. I know Corbin, he's part of Team Legit, so it's good for him. But I think we should start, you know, the brew crew, the Brainstorm Brewery, have people out there that are actually serious about playing the game and going out there and, you know, trying to crush some events. Cause I'm going to start playing a little bit more on Moto because time wise, I can't do like regular events, but definitely getting involved. So, I mean, you guys had some ideas. I know Ryan was talking to somebody about being supported by the Brainstorm Brewery.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, we get people at the events, you know, just wearing shirts, like even if you're just there to trade and stuff, just like seeing someone else, like when I saw people wearing the shirts in Vegas or when people were asking us about the shirts, like it's a good way for, you know, everybody to come together and like, you know, that person's interested in, you know, something that you are as well. And Magic Finance is a good way to, you know, talk about like trades and stuff like that. And plus you also know if you sit across from somebody who's wearing a shirt, like hopefully they have similar, you know, mine to you, and you can still sit there and trade with them, but you're not going to, you know, try and shark that person or anything like that.
That's right. We had a lot of people come up to us in Vegas and say, we want to be a part of something a little bit bigger. We'd like it if there were a little bit more formality to the Brew Crew if you guys gave us a community to be a part of. So we're absolutely all about that. We have some exciting ideas to get you guys all sort of together as a community and able to interact with each other. We're talking about launching a Brew Crew clan on Moto. We're talking about maybe getting some forums together on our website. So we got a lot of exciting ideas, and we'll definitely hear feedback from you guys, because this is all, you know, popular demand. This was you guys coming to us and saying, you know, this is what we want from you guys in order to sort of bring us together as a community. So.
And the t-shirts and the play mats were a big hit. I know we did the tea starter for the t-shirts, and we had some of them made, and it really increased, I guess, the amount of people who were able, felt like they could approach us, because, you know, they're not just asking a random person, who are you? That helped, and people will walk by, even judges walk by and be like, oh my gosh, your playmat's awesome. So, you know, we went through the playmats we had pretty quickly in Vegas, so I have to imagine there could be a second run in the future.
There have to be, like, I'm completely out. Like, I was out of playmats within a day of coming back from Vegas, so we're definitely going to, if you didn't get a playmat, don't worry, we're definitely doing more of those.
That it was amazing, and too bad we didn't get the tokens out in time. As soon as we left on Monday, Heather hit us up, Revised Angels, saying the tokens arrived in the mail at her house. So it completely missed Vegas, but we're going to have some more tokens. I think Jason and Corbin and Ryan and everybody, I'm going to have a few over here for GP Oakland. So we got the Voice of Resurgence tokens drawn by Polish Tamales. Thank you very much, Polish Tamales, for those tokens. And then the back of Maddie Studios again. He did the our playmats as well, so you guys got to check those out. I mean, really hit us up on Twitter. We got the playmats. They're $25 right now, and I think we're going to do this maybe another run or two, and that'll be the end of that. So these are going to be a limited edition. After that, there's going to have to be something else going on.
Yeah, I mean, the playmats are awesome. I'm excited to get the tokens out to people because they're really cool. It's too bad we didn't have them in Vegas, but come find, you know, Ryan, Jason, or I – you know, at events in your area, and we will gladly hand out some of these awesome tokens.
Yeah, and hit me up on Moto. Marcel MTG is the name that you can find me on Moto. And then also, if you hit us up on Twitter, I'm going to be playing a lot more Moto things and trying to get going on with PTQs on the Moto, because I've been playing more. And actually, I've been brewing a little bit. I got, like, this Masters of Cruelty brew with the Grixis one with 8th... Aetheling and Ralzeric. It's a pretty juicy deck, and actually it goes right into Pick of the Week, because for Pick of the Week, I actually think Masters of Cruelty is a good card to pick up. Definitely on Moto. It's like about $1. I think it's $4 in paper, and this card is the real deal. And I've been, I mean, I'm not, it's another, you know, spec right here, and this is a long-term spec. I think this is going to have to be until after rotation. Even now, it's actually pretty a decent card, but the reason why I think it's so good is because in a control deck, I have it along with Aetherling, so you got more of a long-term goal, but it sets, if once you attack with it and you knock someone down to one life, like the game completely changes. Like, this card warps the board, so all your burn spells become kill spells, so it combos with your burn spells. And then early game, you can use your burn spells to control the board and hold down people and take out, you know, creatures, so you can make your guy unblockable. But I think this guy is a very powerful card, and being $1 is criminal. This is like bulk rare mythic prices. So I bought 50 today, and I think, you know, it's definitely a powerful card that's most likely could go up a little bit. So I think it's a good speculation.
All right, I've got another mythic to throw at you guys. And this is one that has already seen some movement and will, I think, in my opinion, just continue to go up. And it's Avacyn, Angel of Hope. Yes, the Avacyn that everyone kind of scoffed at in Avacyn Restored when it came out, if you didn't know, is $15 now, up from $10 6 months ago. And it's kind of steadily increasing. I think it's the next Limbala, and that foils especially will be worth, you know, infinite dollars. Foil Limbala is like $100 now. Regular Limbala is up to $25. I see Avacyn taking the same route just because of, you know, it's a mythic, it's an angel, it's a legendary angel, it's an insane angel with abilities. I mean, it hits all of the right EDH and casual circles to keep it going up. Limbala has that modern play to it as like a one of that kind of gets its price going. So that's the only place the comparison breaks down. But overall, I think Addison's going to be, you know, a strong bet moving forward. Just, there's just so few out there because of, you know, that was the third set, not open for very long, so on and so forth.
Solid work.
Well, I kind of have two picks of the week. This one's kind of limited, so most people aren't going to have a chance to get in on this. But I think a good pickup and trade right now is to pick up the old Swords, Fire and Ice, and Light and Shadow in foil, because the regular price actually went up when the new one was printed, and I mean, they're both at 35 now, so like that caught back up with it, but the foil is not. The foil's still 75. And Jason, what was it you were saying that you put a new Modern Masters one up on eBay for?
I saw it was 185 TCG Mid today.
TCG Mid, so
that's the new Modern Masters foil Sword of Fire and Ice.
Right, and I think that, you know, part of that is going to be hype, and that, you know, that price will probably come down at some point. But at the same time, if that holds, even if that holds at 150 or 140, this one will eventually catch back up to it. So I think that, you know, if you give it a year, this sword will probably also be, you know, $130, $140.
So what do you guys, while we're on the subject of swords, then what do you think about the movement on Sword of Feast and Famine, which, you know, kind of shot up last week or in the last week? Up from like 13 to spiking to 25 or so. How real do you think that is?
I think people realized that Sword of Fire and Ice and Sword of Light and Shadow have now been printed 3 times. So there's probably more of them on the market than there is of Feast and Famine. And suddenly, especially the foils for sure. I think people are realizing that that one is more played than Legacy and, you know, gets just as much cube and modern play. And so why shouldn't it be the same price? And they finally just decided it was going to catch up because it's the most playable of the swords in across formats.
Right? Not modern though. I think across, War and Peace. Yeah, I think War and Peace is much better in modern.
Yeah, probably. But and like that Legacy proves that is the one that is, you know, the best. Like War and Peace isn't really getting sideboard spots. It's not. I don't really see it in Legacy at all.
So in your guys' opinion, the Feast and Famine spike to 25 is not going anywhere.
No, I don't think so. I think that's just where the card should be. I mean, I think the swords, Fire and Ice being reprinted proves that you can't really kill the price of these. They're still in demand, especially if you print them in alt art.
Yeah, I remember when these, Fire and Ice and Light and Shadow were, they were 20 or whatever, and then some point a few years back, SCG started buying them all up at 35, and they were $40 for all, and then they dropped back down, but it seems like they've really come back on strong. So I think you're right that they're, you know, they said they have so much casual appeal just in that, there's the full cycle and there's, you know, all the actual competitive uses for them on top of cube and everything. I mean, I think these are probably some of the safest things you can get in on, especially the older ones.
I absolutely agree.
I want to do pick of the week. Stop talking about stuff that isn't my pick of the week.
Shut up, Jason.
No, Corbin.
All right, go ahead. My second one's fairly irrelevant until next week, actually.
Oh, did you want to do a second one? Then by all means,
go ahead. No. I thought I had a second thing, but the price hasn't caught up with it yet.
Good. I have two. No, I'm just kidding. I do kind of have two, but let's talk about the one first. Since we're talking about how Feast and Famine has gone up and how War and Peace is arguably, I think, better in modern, you have Lightning Helix, Lightning Bolt, Path to Exile, Sword of War and Peace. Helps you dodge all of that. You dodge a lot of the better removal in modern with Sword of War and Peace, and that hasn't gone up. You can still get those for like $14 on Cool Stuff Inc. right now. So I think that's actually probably a sword you want to pick up. I think that's the next one to spike to 25, especially as modern season comes back around. This hasn't been printed a billion times. It's only been printed once.
That's a really good call.
It's silly good in modern, and like it's a card that everyone needs for cube because now that they've reprinted Fire and Ice and Light and Shadow with the art that matches all the other ones, people are going to want, you know, War and Peace for their cube. People are going to play this in modern. It's not really played in Legacy, but I mean, it could be someday if the meta game shifts a little bit. Like, it's not a $13 card. Remember these were $50? I think $13.99 might be like the price floor, and I think it's probably not the worst place to buy in. You might even be able to get them a little cheaper on eBay.
Yeah,
so that's a card I think you want to be picking up.
Plus, being in New Phyrexia, being, you know, the small set, the third set, it was actually open less than Feast and Famine.
Yeah, that's true.
And Body and Mind, obviously.
Yeah, New Phyrexia actually has been spiking on Moto. It's just been, all the cars are ridiculous right now.
I don't think Body and Mind's a bad pickup either.
No, I like
all the swords
because,
are good.
Like, sort
like
of
the
Body
swords
and Mind,
are great. But you got two copies, though.
If the legacy metagame changes back to where it was, like, I think it was Craig Wesco that was running Body and Mind in Maverick, and he was just smashing people. And even though the Body and Mind was printed in the From the Vaults, like, you can still get the Body and Mind for, like, $10 and cool stuff right now, and probably cheaper on eBay. So, like, all those swords, like, if they had... You see one of them spike to 25, and you've got to look at the other ones and be like, why not these?
Yeah,
so I think $10 on Body and Mind and 15 on, or 14 on War and Peace is just, they're the next $25 cards.
Yeah, I think War and Peace is probably the better target of the two as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Body and Mind is clearly the worst of the five.
Yeah.
But it is playable, and if for some of the same reasons that people want the full set, they'll want that one.
I mean, the sword is a sword.
I wouldn't target these in foil, hoping they'll go up, because the From the Vault relics really kind of puts a damper on that.
So speaking of these Modern Masters, what do you guys think about picking them up right now? You think this is the perfect time right now to get it pretty much as low as possible? Or do you think there's another dip coming?
What?
Well, I'm holding on to any of the cards, any of the Chase Rares and Modern Masters, or even their counterparts, the reprints, the original reprints. Do you think this is the bottom right now that these cards are going to be at? Is the demand for them just going to go nothing but higher at this point on?
It has to be, right? Just by... theoretically, the way the market works, I mean, demand right now should not be higher than demand in modern season.
And so right now, everyone should be buying in. Do you think there's a hype going on? Like, we have stores here.
What you have to worry about is that the hype of the Modern Masters set exceeded the hype of modern to such an extent that the cards in it, everyone's all about it now until you get around to modern season. And then, you know, there's not really the mass buying because people realize they still need fetch lands. They still need all of this stuff. So I think there is a risk there that needs to be stated. That said, I don't really see how you can go wrong getting in on them.
I don't think there was as much of a lull. Like, there wasn't a real big drop off when you had modern, and then, like, you weren't playing it as a GP and PTQ format for a while. That didn't really happen as much because modern has been played kind of sporadically. So people really aren't dumping their modern stuff.
Right.
I haven't really seen anybody dump modern stuff. So people that have the stuff kind of have it. So I think as you get closer to tournament time and people change decks, they're going to want fetch lands that they don't have right now because they had got the wrong ones and stuff like that. But as far as staples go, I don't know if they're going to shoot up when modern starts getting played again, because I think it's being played at F&Ms. It's, you know, it's not as much. Modern doesn't really go from being a non-thing to being a huge thing.
Right. And look at Scalding Tarn and Misty Rainforest. You know, I sold all of my fetch lands, well, the vast majority of them, during modern season under the logic that, okay, well, they've jumped. I made a bunch of money on these. It's time to make my profits. Assuming that they drop back down post-modern season, and since modern season ended, they've gone up. So, you know, I don't regret my decision.
I think that's artificial, though. Like, you couldn't have predicted that. I think their price is being propped up because actors in the market are scooping them. I don't
necessarily know about that. I think that the actors that are scooping them aren't scooping them to sit on them. I think they're scooping them because they're selling out of them.
I had people walk into my store today wanting to buy playsets of Misty Rainforest and Scalding Tarns from me. I mean, it seems like it's anecdotal evidence, obviously, but I think it is just, you know, the larger trend that people want these. And it's not just one or two cards. Like, Court of Calling just went up recently, too. Like, the prices on modern stuff that has not been reprinted is not dropped since modern season ended. I don't see any reason for them to drop now. You know, I think they just continue going up, at least for, you know, the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Celestial Colonnade is $7 on Moto. Oh, my God.
On Moto, wow, I was just going to say, yeah, that seems about what it is in real life, but wow.
Yeah, shout out to us. It was $3 just 2 weeks ago, or last month.
Yeah, I mean, they're all going up. I mean.
Oh, man. Like, yep, people are in. This has done it. Wizards has made the hit that they wanted to make. They revived Modern, but they realized they have not done enough. Because until we get Modern Masters 2, these cards are just going to keep on going higher and higher.
We'll see what happens with Modern in, say, the next 2 years. It's difficult. I mean, it's one thing you get into the format and there's a couple really expensive cards and maybe you avoid those decks. But when even, like, you know, the world, like, Manlands, like, Colonnade hits $7, as the format becomes more popular, there's so many cards, the prices are going to keep going up and it's hard to you can't reprint everything. I mean, I think we've talked about it on here plenty of times before, but kind of the next shoe to fall, the next thing to go has got to be the Scars Fastlands. You are just $3, $4 right now. There's no way that...
I can't believe those.
Yeah, there's no way that with how everything else is going, these aren't $10 in a year or two. Like, they seem like
they have to.
It seems like they're going to go through something similar to the Fetchlands, where one day a dealer or whatever just buys them out, and all of a sudden the price triples overnight because they just realize that the pent up demand is there. But I mean, we talked about those a ton on here.
Absolutely.
But you know, the cards we talk about, telling people go, "Oh, you're beating a dead horse." And then 2 weeks later, those are the cards that seem to go up. So let's talk about it a little more until people start pestering us.
I mean, that's what. Yeah, I mean, that's.
I do enjoy watching people eat the proverbial shoe.
Yeah, a good call doesn't stop being a good call just because you repeat it, right?
I mean, I don't think there's a proverb about eating a shoe.
There's not.
So you think about one of our bad calls, the Master of the Pearl Trident. Do you think it becomes a good call now that we got a Merfolk and a Land 14?
If you sit on a card long enough, eventually it'll become a good call, I think.
That's true. I mean, look at Death Shadow, right? That was obviously a nuts call.
Did you shut up about Death Shadow? No one cares that you were right about that card twice.
Except for all the people who told me I was wrong about that card.
I told you were wrong because you'd already been right about it once, and I thought you just couldn't let go. You wanted to relive your glory days, kind of like Marcel wishing he was back in Vegas. You wish you could be making money off Death Shadow again.
It's true.
Then he does.
Then he totally does.
All right, well, let's talk about the merfolk that we referenced. Tidebinder Mage.
No, somebody other than Corbin talk about the merfolk.
No, shut up, Jason.
He's incapable of remaining.
Corbin needs to
talk
about it because I don't want to hear him fapping in the background.
Let me talk about my merfolk.
Five merfolk. Had a new hashtag.
Six.
It costs 2 blue. It is a 2/2 merfolk wizard. When it enters the battlefield, tap target red or green creature an opponent controls. That creature does not untap as long as you control Tidebinder Mage. This card is so awesome.
It doesn't even need to be a merfolk. That's the best part.
But it is. It costs 2. It's beautiful.
If you just wanted to play it as a good creature, like maybe in standard, I don't know what green creature we're going to be tapping down, but.
We're in real decks.
You play Boros Reckoner. Tap down Boros Reckoner in standard.
Yeah, sure. Tap that Boros Reckoner.
I know which screen wants to be Wish they could probably tap down the Witch Stalker.
I just want to tap down Tarmogoyfs with it, and I will, because it's awesome. It's everything you want in Merfolk. It's a creature, it's a 2-drop, and it's like pseudo removal.
Yeah, it's really good. Like I like how it could be good tempo, because really the Merfolk deck in Modern isn't the kind of aggro control deck it is in Legacy, because you don't have Force of Will and Brainstorm in that. So you're playing stuff like, what is it, Vapor Snag and stuff a tempo deck.
Yeah.
So this actually is just huge for tempo.
And it actually does a ton to like catch up, because like Jund can be one of your problematic matchups, because if they can land like a Tarmogoyf and then kind of keep you from overloading the board, you can be pretty stymied. This is like one of the few top decks in Merfolk that could actually like pull you out of a losing situation against a deck like Jund. Because if maybe you have a dude on board and they have a Tarmogoyf kind of, you know, bigger than you, you draw this, like, not only are you laying another creature that they have to answer, you're getting your guy through. Like, I mean, it solves some problems for the deck that the deck had.
Oh, tangling a Goyf is just, that's the dream.
Yeah.
This card is so good. If it had been in Gatecrash, I'd still be in Simic.
Like, I mean, are they going to kill this and then you're just going to overrun them with Lords? Like, it definitely fills a hole. Like, I probably in my deck maybe trim a Vapor Snag or two, but maybe trim a couple Korra Helm Commanders.
Well, this does the same role as the Vapor Snag, almost. Like, this does what you were doing with Vapor Snag, only it beats them in their face and deals them way more than one damage.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't protect your creatures like a Vapor Snag does, because sometimes you Vapor Snag your own guys, you know, to get your, like, it's pretty good play to Vapor Snag against Silver Girl Adept if they try to kill it, you know, just because it is good use of resources, or you save a Lord with it. So yeah, I mean, it doesn't fill all the same roles, but like, this card has to help your creature matchups. Like, you're still going to have the problem where you die to the decks where they're just infinite removal, but this goes a lot farther than the deck. Like, this helps that because it's kind of a 2-for-1 in that it's a creature and it's a removal spell, pseudo-removal spell by itself, which is something your other creatures did not have. So, yeah, it's awesome. I won't go on anymore, but...
I was just going to say you're about to start doubling up into repeat yourself territory, which is funny, but... I think Marcel really wants to talk about Witch Stalker, so let's let him do that.
Thank you, Jason. That's unconditionally polite for you.
Don't get used to it.
Talk about Witch Stalker.
No, I mean, I just wanted to see what you guys think. I think I like it because they're doing these cards that hate. Also, Witch Stalker is a creature wolf, 3/3 creature for 1/2 green. It got hexproof. And whenever an opponent casts a blue or black spell during your turn, put a 1/1 counter on Witchstalker. I guess this is going to be a cycle. We're going to have a bunch of these hate cards. The same thing as the Merfolk. It hates on the green and red, which is his enemy colors. And here's Witchstalker, which is doing the same. And, I like this card. I don't think it's overly powerful. I think it's a nice role player. It's adequately
priced.
It's
like $8 to $10 pre-order. So, what do we think about $8 to $10?
I think it's high. But
I think that's high.
Yeah. It's like it's
high, but it's actually insane, right? And Bant Expert, it's gotta just be absurd in that deck.
Cool. Why? A deck that like you don't have after rotation because like,
I mean, sure, but like
without Geist of St. Traft, I don't think you even
want to. No, it's like, probably dead after rotation, sure, but like in the next 3 months, I think it makes that deck just like a boogeyman.
But why? Well, I mean, what are you going to take out for this?
Like some of the chafe, like I don't know, maybe like Fencing Ace or just any of the non-hex, like there's several non-hexproof dudes that deck plays. Just to fill.
Have you ever hit somebody with a Fencing Ace though, with the equipment in that deck? Like you just, if they got the removal, great, cause then they don't get to lose the game next turn. Because if they don't have the removal, they just die.
Right.
I don't know if this is a main deck card necessarily.
Yeah.
Outside of just that one deck.
It just increases your frequency of nut draws where you go Mana Dork into crazy hexproof 3-drop into enchantments.
This doesn't remind me of like Tarmogoyf. This reminds me of Great Sable Stag, which was like the sideboardiest of sideboard cards.
Well, this reminds me of Geist of St. Traft because you played on turn 2, you enchant it and you kill people.
Oh, but see, he has the
that
angel
reminds
that's
me of
scary.
Hyperbole.
Like the Geist of St. Traft is scary because of the angel that he casts, and then that's additional damage that you're just not gonna be able to take care of. That's 4 to the face, regardless on top of what he gets pumped. Here, I mean, he's no Geist of St. Traft. I mean, if anything, he may be a 2 of in the deck they play, but I still think you don't want to have the 3-drop, cause then you're over relying on your mana dorks. And
okay, well, like, let's talk about him outside of that one deck then. Cause I don't think the card is that narrow. I don't think they designed it to be that narrow.
Yeah, outside of the deck. I mean, it's a circumstance that it happens to be like that, but outside of the deck, I think it's like a sideboard card, like, definitely like the Stag. In the, nothing more than like, say, $1 or $2 should be worth.
I think it's like, you have to remember that core set cards can be a little more expensive than expansion set cards just because the core sets typically open less. That's how you get like $15 Phantasmal Images and so on. So
it was in a dual deck when it was 15 though. Like Phantasmal Image, I wouldn't say scarcity led to its price. I want to be clear on that because I think it was absolutely.
I mean, I think it was part of it. It's the same reason when Thraktos came out, it was $30 and when even Snapcaster wasn't pushing 30. Like,
so we don't see this going up, like,
I don't think it goes past 8 to 10.
Is Rag tested? Yeah, I don't either. I like this card, but I think you just try to open it in a booster.
I mean, I don't think it's $1 or $2, whatever, but I mean, I don't think it's 10. I think it's probably like 5 to 7. If it finds a home, you know, a solid home, it's 5 to 7. Maybe it holds this price for a little while at least, but I think obviously after rotation, it dies down quite a bit.
It really depends on what the format looks like, because Great Sable Stag was like 12, 15 bucks at one point just because fairies was everywhere. Right. If there is a boogeyman blue-black deck that we need this to take care of, like, I don't know, maybe.
But like, it's only like Voice of Resurgence where it only activates when you cast on your turn. So they just cast their spells on their turn and.
I mean, they still wrath it away or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So, like, it doesn't hate out.
And it doesn't actually have protection, so like their dudes can still interact with it.
Yeah, like this card is interesting. But
like I said, I think it's insane in the Bant Hexproof deck. I think it's probably solid, but you know, ultimately not and crazy elsewhere.
I think post rotation is just going to drop from its price. It's going to be held up. It's going to be held up by Bant Hexproof because people are just going to try to jam it in because.
Well, I mean, yeah, to answer your question though, like you replace the Smiters that are like a 2 of in the deck.
I don't know.
Impossibly.
I don't.
I think those 4-0 Smiters, those 4/4 Smiters are very valuable. It's just, I don't know. I would have to see. I'd have to play with it.
I really don't know. It just seems like too clunky a card for them not to have a plan for it when they printed it. So if the format could shift as such that this will be a good sideboard card you need, but I don't think even in those cases, you'll be glad that you pre-ordered it for 8 to 10. So I'm gonna stay away from this guy. I think that's all we need to say about it.
Agreed.
All right. So we should talk about a card that will not see any constructed play. And I saw in the spoiler that a new Hydra was added. I was like, oh, obviously, you know, $5 to $10 at some point. over the next year.
Two Hydras.
The Hydra's good.
Which one? There are two Hydras.
The Mythic's good.
Because those are the ones that are always worth money. But yeah, and then I was like, okay, the Mythic's kind of playable. It's fine. Then I went over and looked at the pre-sale price of $20. And
is it
$20?
Wow. I looked at it yesterday and it wasn't $20.
It's going to be $20.
I'm going to go look at eBay real quick.
Okay, so while he does that, I'll read it. It's Colonian Hydra. It's 3 colorless, 2 green. Trample, it enters the battlefield with 4 1-1 counters on it. Whenever it attacks, double the number of 1-1 counters on each creature you control. Like, it's obviously an absurd ability.
Corpse Jack Menace!
Holy shit, playsets are, every single playset is closed at $60 on eBay.
So it's a $15 card then.
I mean, it's a good card though. Insane. I mean,
I don't give a shit. Why is, it's not $15 good.
No, it's the impatience factor.
No, this is impatience. This is not Consecrated Sphinx. It's not $15 good mythic.
I agree. But it is going to drop pretty heavily after it comes out and the set's opened. And then I'll get them cheap because Hydras always stay popular.
Right. And this one's actually playable.
Like, I'm actually really excited. I think it's really good with Corpse Jack Menace. I think you can do some absurd things with those two cards.
Corpse Jack Menace is bad though. So.
Well, Darwin Castle doesn't, and he did really well at the Pro Tour, and he's in Hall of Fame. So I'm not gonna argue with Darwin Castle.
People like Corpse Jack Menace on like turn 3 with a Mandork and Hydra on turn 4. It's an 8/8. Like, okay, I can see the beginnings of a deck.
I mean, and then your opponent goes Supreme Verdict, and you're like, oh.
Oh yes, in Perfect Magic Christmas Land, where your opponent always has Elder.
Perfect Magic. You don't need anything else. There's control where you didn't do anything relevant till turn 4.
I mean, you don't need to do anything but the Hydra. I mean,
you do
on a 5 drop. You know, you play this and you got an 8/8 trampler that's just gonna turn into a 16/16.
I mean, it is a 2-turn clock, I'll give you that.
So it's just like, yeah, I mean, do you need anything else?
You know what, I don't like the card anymore, guys, cause Ryan used the it dies to removal argument and, I'm no longer excited.
If I'm paying 5 mana in standard, look at the cards we have to compare this to, like Thragtusk. This is never going to see play.
Until Thragtusk leaves, yeah, I mean, this is not a Thragtusk replacement.
Never see play. Say that it won't see
like
money.
Every time we say, oh, this card could see play, and like it's not going to. There's too many format staples, and like, yeah, we're losing Restoration Angel, we're losing Thragtusk. There will be
we're losing all of the creatures.
We're losing standards.
Every creature that every deck plays.
The same power level. There will be a 5 drop in green that is far better than this.
Not bad.
You
this
didn't
is
like
actually
Huntmaster
really good.
When they printed it.
You're right.
I'm sorry, you don't understand this. Like, right? you don't enough. Kill this
Look
card.
At Huntmaster. I would rather play Huntmaster for 5 mana than play this card. Like, it's true. Come on.
What do you mean? Huntmaster?
If Huntmaster cost 5 mana and was an M14, which one would you be putting in your deck?
I would put this in my deck before Huntmaster. You know why? Because Huntmaster, you can deal with Huntmaster. You can survive a Huntmaster.
This
card, if you don't have the removal, it's over. And Churn and Burn is not going to kill this creature. Because it still has got the counters
that's
on.
That's true, actually.
I mean, that's relevant, but Far and Away still does.
Hey, that's okay.
Well,
like, I mean,
if
you don't deal with this creature, it's an 8/8 trampler in your face. That's all I'm saying. It's like, if you can construct board states.
Who knows? Right? I might be
they
wrong.
They waste their removal. I just think that, you know,
I don't think it matters. Actually, what are we even talking about? It doesn't matter because it's a $15 to $20 pre-order. Right. So it doesn't matter at all.
It does matter though, because if this card doesn't see initial play, it may be go down to a point where it is, you know,
well, that's
you can pick up.
Every Hydra, like Vastwood Hydra,
right.
doesn't see initial play, you're gonna pick it up.
Which is why I said when I mentioned the card, this one will be obvious.
We know what Vastwood Hydra, did we talk about Vastwood before? Yeah. X green green comes into battlefield
with X counters
on it. When it dies, you distribute those counters. That's pretty cool. It's not as powerful an ability, but it seems kind of Thragtusky.
I mean,
like, you got to have another dude. So like, if they kill it with a wrath, like you're screwed anyway. But if they kill it with a non-wrath or dies in combat or something like that, I don't know. Like it's a Hydra. Casual players are gonna play Hydras.
I mean, the relevant argument here is that is there a point where you reach a critical mass of Hydras that they stop being so casually popular? I don't know.
No,
you had a critical
not until you can have
like of Hydra EDH decks.
Yeah, until you have 100 Hydras.
Okay.
Like, that's actually the critical mass you're going to hit beforehand.
Okay, fair enough.
And they have like 60 Hydras, so you can have nothing but Hydras in your EDH deck.
So, since we've already talked about shitty tribal decks once, can we talk about the possibility of Slivers?
In Legacy?
No.
It's built.
No. I mean, legacy, modern, standard?
No, we can't.
I don't know about modern, because I think the thing that makes slivers better than merfolk is the fact that you have crystalline sliver, and you can do stupid shit with hibernation sliver.
But you can play opal.
Bouncing slivers for two life and replaying them with harmonic sliver to, like, completely keep them off artifacts and enchantments is disgusting. All the disgusting stuff you can do in Legacy revolves around the fact that you have those slivers that are not modern playable. And, like, you're just a bad merfolk otherwise with a terrible mana base.
You're a bad merfolk in every format you play slivers, except EDH.
You're wrong, Corbin.
Merfolk can't do the utility stuff that slivers can do, and they printed some pretty good utility slivers. I actually like that red one, the one that, like, turns everything into a goblin medic.
Oh, yeah.
The reason slivers will never be as good as merfolk is that your mana takes all the colors.
You know what? I hope what happens to you, I hope the mute of all thing happens to you this week, and 2 hours after Dawn is cast, they're going to spoil crystalline sliver as a single-sided crystalline, and then, like, it's going to crush my...
Oh, man, a single-sided crystalline?
Yeah.
How much money would I pay? I would just give them all my money. Like, here's my credit card information. Just give me 4 of those.
You know what merfolk doesn't have? Essence sliver.
Doesn't have harmonic or necrotic or hibernation.
Yeah, there's so much utility in slivers.
Oh,
that
no,
they can
tap a red or green dude down forever, though.
Crystalline sliver is the one to find.
They can keep a red or green dude tapped.
You also don't have the ability to gem. You also don't have the ability to, like, harmonic sliver. I mean, you don't get to play Quasali Pride Mage in your merfolk deck.
I mean,
harmonic's better than Quasali Pride Mage because you don't sack the merfolk. It's just when it comes
I'll definitely, I have no qualms with, you know, say testing slivers in modern when you have the new ones in, because there is a lot of utility if you can get the mana to work.
I'm not advocating playing in modern.
I am.
I mean, I think
it's gotta be better than merfolk.
It's already proven that it's not good enough for legacy in the last 2+ years. I mean,
it's because there weren't enough lords. Like, there was no reason not to play.
Because it's like a 5-color deck, and you get blown out by wasteland as opposed to blowing people out with wasteland.
In the format where very few wastelands are being run, and there's way more other there's way bigger problems that merfolk faces that slivers can deal with, such as the removal and stuff like that.
Yeah, they cast Supreme Verdict, and merfolk goes, oh, would you like to play game 2 now? And slivers goes, all right, I'll bounce the dudes I need to live and replay them with vials.
All right, that's why slivers is so successful in legacy.
I'm saying it's not successful because it doesn't have as many lords, except now it does. They printed another muscle sliver.
All right, we'll see. I'm not like opposed to it in any
how
way.
You guys, oh, yes, how you about are. This? How about you guys do this? You guys build a deck by Gen Con. You guys are going to battle, and we're going to have it.
I mean, that's like
a battle for Fogo. Battle that's for
terrible.
Fogo.
Like, whether or not your
slivers, you can't win.
Whether or not your slivers beat merfolk in a one-on-one match is in no way saying this deck is better than the other for a metagame. Like,
hey, wow, that doesn't matter.
The results before we play the match.
And that's
you've just conceded already.
That's,
I like that.
Probably what's happening here. Yeah.
How would you do that? You guys go on a one-on-one battle, and then you go and enter into a tournament. There's got to be some legacy side event, and just play the legacy side event, and who does better?
See, that's a better plan.
Yeah, I want to play all day to prove to myself what I already knew.
It's not going to be all day. It's going to be like a 5 round, maybe 4, 5, 6 rounds. Just play.
Now Jason's the one quitting.
Because I don't want to play Magic.
I'm not even excited
for that
this year.
What?
I said, I'm not even excited for Gen Con this year. After Vegas, I'm just like, well.
I mean, Gen Con's always
fun.
Talked to Ryan today. I'm like, what are we doing for a hotel? He's like, are we even going to Gen Con?
Man. Gen Con's always fun, Ryan.
Gen Con's always
fun.
Don't take your trade binder. Go play True Dungeon.
Yeah,
like, it's great, but the whole time I'm going to be like, dude, I could be chilling out at the beach house, drinking.
There's not a beach house.
So many things to do at Gen Con.
Whatever, yeah, it wasn't a beach house, but, like, that's the Woodstock house, whatever you want to call it.
Don't let Magic define your Gen Con weekend, because if you do, you're doing it wrong, because Gen Con is just...
No, it's not going to, but regardless of Magic, I was not in Vegas to play Magic. I sold some magical cards, and I played 2 rounds of this said Magic game, but that was not what Vegas was about. He's just gonna have a tough time topping that vacation a month afterwards as well.
Sure.
I wish it was 5 months from now. Then I'd be excited about Gen Con again.
I mean, not disagreeing with you, but Gen Con's always fun.
Well, my wife is coming with me to Gen Con, and she might not murder me for going to Vegas without her, so I'm gonna make sure she has fun at Gen Con so she doesn't know what she missed in Vegas. Because I'm not telling her.
I mean,
I came home, I was very tight-lipped. She's like, do you have fun in Vegas? And I was like, yeah, I guess so. It's okay. You didn't miss much. It's fine. Thanks for staying home with the dog and the bills and the responsibilities.
So what do you guys think about Chandra?
Chandra? I think it sucks.
Underwhelmed?
I saw you saying nice things about Chandra on Twitter, Marcel.
Yes. I mean, I don't think it's as bad as I thought it was at first.
He used the P word, guys. He used the P word.
It is playable.
Pyromancer? No.
God damn it, Corbin.
No, I actually have to agree with Marcel here.
I think it's because trying to play. Well, you play this in the right day because it's card advantage. It's pretty sick card advantage.
I guess.
I mean, card advantage every turn. Look, right now the planeswalker you got is Jace, Architect of Thought, and so he can get you what net you two cards if you hit him twice. He nets you two cards, but then you're down four loyalty. You could pop this every turn.
But like, if you use a zero ability the turn it comes into play, like you play, you're probably not, like, you're not doing anything with it.
Why would you use a zero ability?
Why would you?
That's the point. Like, you're not. So you're not getting.
Okay. So yeah. I realize it comes into play for five mana. Planeswalker that gets printed. I realize I do that, but I gotta ask the question I always ask, which is there a deck this wants to go in? And its plus one ability seems like it wants to go in a swarmy deck. Yep. Like keeping them from being able to block with something is got to be relevant. Otherwise, you're ticking up just adding counters trying to get to your -7.
Right. Well, so, zero mana ability feels like a swarm deck too. Think of the zero saying draw a card.
Sure, but I mean, you don't want to use that right away, maybe necessarily.
Some decks you do. Like what?
Yeah, I realize, like, yeah, it's essentially draw a card. If it's a land, you're like, great. And if it's not a land, you're also like, great.
Yeah, so.
It's not less, you, like, your Chandra has to live a turn for you to even do anything with a second.
This card. Yeah. This card in any, like, yeah, I agree, it has to live, but at the same time, there's tons of planeswalker control decks out there right now.
What does that even mean, it has to live a turn? What does that even mean?
It means you can't card advantage the turn it comes into play.
You're not gonna do much with it, yeah, when it comes into play, you really have to wait till you untap before this card actually turns on.
Where the card goes, you were right the first time, like, it goes in, like, it tops out like a Naya Blitz deck, because the one damage is relevant, the can't block is relevant, and if it does live, like, whatever you're playing with it is super relevant. But
so a Naya Blitz deck where its ultimate's going to be irrelevant?
Yeah, because the ultimate's always
so
irrelevant.
Like,
who cares about the ultimate?
I know you don't evaluate planeswalkers in terms of their ultimate, but you don't preclude it in your deck building either. Otherwise, like, what's the point? You might as well play frickin', what's his name, Tybalt, if all you're trying to do is draw random cards.
We just talked about making use of the plus one ability, right?
I think you got to make use of all the abilities, and there's not a deck that you can do all three things.
I think copying a Searing Spear or a Pillar of Flame is fine if we want to talk about the ultimate. Like, that 9 damage is probably going to win you the game.
I think that Jund midrange deck would be fine with this card.
Like, put it in a Naya Blitz deck, you play it on turn 4 or 5, you take out their blocker, you do 1 damage to them, you get through. Like, that's where you use it. Use it to top out an aggressive deck. Like, I don't know how good it is in that role, because I don't know that it's better than, like, say, Hellrider in a deck like that at the 4-drop spot, but, like, that's the deck where you want.
I mean, I don't think this is going to be a super valuable Planeswalker. I definitely think it's going to crash a little bit, but Wizards know this is their flagship for M14. They're not going to make this card suck.
Yeah, this is either going to be the major sleeper of the set, and this is going to be the next Liliana, or this card is going to see very little play. And I think it completely depends on what the metagame shift is after
rotation. Right, so it's a $20 pre-order. What do you think?
$20 is actually down cheap for Planeswalker historically.
I think it's going to go down before it goes up.
Me too.
Yeah.
I think that you're going to have time before I may be eating my, you know, my
the
words.
The proverbial shoe.
2 weeks. My proverbial shoe. 2 weeks after pre-release when it's seen no play. When it sees a bunch of play and, like, the price spikes, but I think you have time. Like, I don't think it's going to see play right now. I don't think there's a deck in this current metagame, you are correct about that, Jason, that wants this. But that doesn't mean after rotation, when this card's down to $12, because it hasn't seen play for, you know, 3 months at this point, that you shouldn't be picking them up.
I don't know, I wish people play more cards, because I think I said the same thing about Gideon. It's like, this just needs a deck, and then just nobody cared to make it.
Right, well, Gideon still has another year, so.
Yeah, I'd like to see this card find a home, but it...
I think clearly
they made this the card for the set. Like, this is the one card they're like, all right, this is, you know, Chandra's our big flagship card, so.
I mean, they got, Felicia Day to make that commercial about Chandra.
Yeah.
You guys seen that?
No.
You should go check it out. It's actually a pretty good cool
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's good marketing by Wizards. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, so the point is they definitely made it the face of the set, and they did not make it overpowered. I mean, it may be good, it may be playable, but it's certainly not insane.
I want to play this with Master of Cruelties.
I think all of its abilities are good. I just, you need to find a deck that can utilize all of them. Speaking of Planeswalkers, if I'm allowed to segue away, have we talked about Garrick yet on this cast?
Nope.
Oh, no.
let's talk about Garrick, because he reminded me of another six mana Planeswalker that I didn't think saw a lot of play. So let's talk Garrick, Color of Beasts. Six mana, four colorless and two green. This plus one is reveal the top five cards of your library, put all creatures revealed this way into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. His minus three is you may put a green creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. Pretty awesome. And his -7 is you get an emblem with whenever you cast a creature spell, you may search your library for a creature card, put it in the battlefield, and shuffle your library. So a wild pair emblem seems pretty nuts. His starting loyalty is 4, so you'll have to take him up 3 times to get to use his ultimate. But
pre-order of 20.
What's that?
Pre-ordering 20 at Cool Stuff.
I don't know. He seems powerful, but I don't know if the 6 mana is too much, because I really like Soren Markov at first, too.
Okay, so here's what we talked about on the way home, and this is kind of how, the three of us evaluated it, was if you're playing a ramp deck where you want to cast, say like a Primeval Titan or a 7-drop or an 8-drop, if you're in a deck like that, or a deck like that materializes, then you probably want like some number of Garrick, because ramping into this guy and then dropping that 7 or 8 drop with him while still having a Planeswalker around, it is strong. He also gives you the ability to, refill your hand, to search for those big guys. But I think that that's the only way you can play him, is if you find that deck where you're already ramping, to something bigger than Garrick.
Yeah.
I think that's where you want him.
Yeah. Cause like, why play the Planeswalker at all if you can just, not use a Planeswalker's -3 and bring him to 1 loyalty right away to drop something that you could have just ramped to
Right. Maybe
the next turn.
Right, and you do want to play it in a deck with that big stuff, because you want, the backup plan. If you don't have the Garrick to drop the big thing, at least you're still ramping to the big thing,
And having that big stuff still in your library to, if you get his emblem.
Yeah, I think that in Theros we're going to see bigger stuff. It's probably built in.
They're making a dual deck called Heroes and Monsters, so I've got a feeling there's going to be quite a bit of both. I don't think the monster is going to be, Vastwood Hydra. I think the monster is going to be some mythic crazy beast from Theros.
Right.
And there's going to be cool heroes, too. And who knows how much multicolor they'll be. Like, maybe the whole green restriction won't be a thing if there's, like, good red-green stuff or good black-green or something like that.
So, what do you guys think about the pre-order price of 20?
I actually think that my initial reaction was that was a little bit high.
I think if you're a player, you're okay picking them up at 20 just because they may spike up if they see any play that first weekend. And, like, voice, they could hold it for a while. Like, I don't think they're going to hit voice levels, but, if they see even the 3 of them on a sideboard and it starts making a top 8 in that first week or two, they're going to probably hit $30. So if you need them as a player, and you plan on playing them in the first couple of months, I would pick them up right away.
Do you think it's that good, though?
I don't think you move in on them in cash.
I don't think you move in on them at all. Because even if it gets played, it's probably like a 2 of.
Yeah, 2 of it.
Even if it's 2 of, it'll hold 20, though, right off the bat.
It's sure, it'll be that first week. Fast. But, like, what percentage of our listeners are going to be happy playing 20 because they have to have this that first week? Like, that seems like a low
percentage. It's no deck right now. No,
yeah, but I think
that's
a good percentage of our listeners might be able to supply the people with that kind of impatience with the card. So maybe you try to pack it, I guess. And if you pack it and you can out it for 20 that first weekend, are we advocating doing that?
I think you wait a week, because in a week it's still going to be 20. It's not going to drop. And it could be 30 or 40 if it saw play. Like, I don't think there's any harm in holding on to him for a week or two.
Yeah, but I don't see any reason to even get in on him at 20.
We're saying pack
them. I'm not saying you get in on them, unless you're a player who needs them. Or when you're thinking from like the mind of making money, I'm thinking from the mind of not having to pay more money down the line.
Well, I think
if you pick them up now at 20, if you pick them up now at 20 and they don't hit, you have 2 or 3 weeks to be able to get rid of them still while they're at 20. But if they do hit and you need them for that deck that they hit and you want to play that deck, and all of a sudden they're $30 or $40, like, then you've got to go shell out more.
I mean, sure.
Buying them now if you're a player.
I guess, but like, fine. Sure. I mean, that's, I guess that's one way to approach it. I mean,
again, to make money on it, no, I don't think you touch it.
Yeah. But. Ryan just explained a facet of finance to Corbin. You heard it here first on the cast, folks.
I mean, that's, you know, I disagree because you say buy them at 20, it's still going to be 20. Like, if you're buying them at 20 cash, you're not outing them at 20 cash. So, like, Corbin, maybe you're trading them at that.
Chris, how are you not getting this? Leave the word outing out of this conversation. You're not planning on giving them. There are people who listen to this podcast who are players who are trying to make the game cheaper for them. Not everyone's trying to, like, make money off these cards.
Right, I understand that. And I would tell them.
Having to pay 30 for them the next week because they saw it playing the sideboard. What I'm saying is they're not going to drop below 20. So as a player who may potentially need them, if they do hit and they are in decks you want to play, you might as well pick them up at 20.
I guess so.
Get rid of them if they don't see any play.
Well, you just said to leave the word outing out of the conversation, and then you say...
Oh, my God. This is a faithful reenactment of the conversation that took place in the car.
Yeah. Anyways,
really?
I put a gun in my mouth.
Whatever. I don't think you touch... My point is, I don't think you touch the card at 20. It's not going to see play. You're going to be able to pick him up cheaper.
What if we pack it? Let's pretend that you're going to buy a case of the set because your name's Jason, and that's what I'm going
to
do.
I think you hold on to it for 2 weeks.
Thank you. Most people are going to pack the cards because everyone's going to play the pre-release. Like, don't pre-order it, but if you pack it, we're going to wait and see where it goes.
And if you are a player, pre-order it if you think you want them.
Oh, I thought we just said no to that, Ryan.
So I say no to that.
You are a
player.
I say no to
that too. Okay, so Marcel, what's your vote?
I'm saying, on Moto, I'm not going to pick them up right away. I'm going to wait till they drop.
Fun Moto. Okay.
I think Moto's a little different though, but.
Well, we have a 2/3 in paper then.
I'm a player first. I'm going to wait till they drop, but you know, eventually I'll get them because they will eventually go up.
I would just like to isolate the audio of Marcel saying I'm a player. That's got to be useful later.
That's true.
A player and an oath a lot.
I rehash this argument. We'll cover it again afterwards, I'm sure.
Okay, so now let's talk about the real question with Garrick. What do you think the promo Garrick's worth and going to be worth?
The San Diego Comic Con black one?
Yep.
Isn't he part of, aren't they doing all 5 Planeswalkers?
It's like a pack, Comic Con. It's probably.
200 just for the stupid Garrick.
No.
Yes.
No. Okay. And how long? Time frame.
Oh, compare it to another San Diego Comic-Con promo. Wait, there's never been one.
No, so I mean, time frame. Yeah, but a lot more people attend, like, San Diego Comic-Con than you think. Like, there's a lot of people there.
More than I think? How many times have you been? Because I've been there 4 times.
Like, 3 times. So you know how many people are there and how many people are getting these for free.
I know how many people are
getting these for free. Interested in Magic who will just be... There will be people who will be, not necessarily throwing away, but will just be selling them or trading them off right there. There will be a lot of them that first weekend. I don't think it'd be 200. I can see the pack going for 200.
Oh man, it looks so good. I just see it. Oh wow.
Yeah, they do look sick. I mean, I like them a lot, but again,
like, I can see that.
The pack is probably reasonable. Like, I want them, don't get me wrong. I would happily pay 100 for the pack. Anyone brought them to me.
I'm saying wait as long as you can, because I want to tell you a story about Comic-Con. I worked at a company that had like 5 booths set up around the hall, and the booth I was set up was right by, God, I want to say Harper or whatever company published Harry Potter. So they had these like tote bags made out of like durable canvas. They were like quality that just said Harry Potter and the, you know, purple dildo or whatever the last book was. And I don't think it was the purple dildo. It was probably something else, but it just, all it had was just that. And they were selling on eBay for like $250, and I was like, are you kidding me? So I wanted to get one. They had run out. So they're like, don't worry, we're going to get more on Saturday. So I got mine on Saturday. I was, you know, first there when they opened up, and I was like, you know, before you get this rush of people in here, can you give me one of those bags? And they're like, I'm not really supposed to do this, but yeah, I'll hook you up. They gave me the bag. I worked the whole day. I ran home that night, put it up on eBay. It didn't sell for like $30. So I'm thinking there would be like a huge initial rush for that kind of stuff. But then after a while, once everyone that's got it has got it, if it's anything like Harry Potter and the purple dildo tote bags, there probably won't be much sustained demand for it. And I think there'll be impatience to get that kind of stuff. Well, so I would definitely be careful.
I think that nothing is like Harry Potter and the purple dildo tote bag, but this seems to have some sort of like long-term value in that, like, it probably gets put in cubes and stuff.
You'll probably want the whole set, too.
Right.
Speaking of purple dildos.
I think the set will end up being $200.
I mean,
there's... I think just the set, not like... Okay, that's fine.
I guess, really...
Why would you break the set up if you had it anyway?
Right, exactly.
I mean, also, like,
we want these cubes.
We don't know, like, because it's, I can't actually find a baseline price for it right now. So, I mean, it's kind of just throwing darts at this point.
You guys talked over a perfectly good Marcel segue that had so much potential.
No segue talk.
Had so much potential. He mentioned the purple dildo. We were going to move on from there, and then I want to know where he was going with that. I think our listeners do, too.
Purple dildo that somebody's going to draw on my oath of ancient wood.
Oh, yeah. We can talk about the card I'm most excited about.
You would be.
Ryan, you get to talk about it because
you would be. Anyone
who cares?
You know what? I'm going to be really sad because right now all we have is a foreign version of this card, so we don't actually know if that's the real name. But in German, apparently, the rough translation is Oath of Ancient Wood. And people like their cards such as Bone Flute and Sphinx's Bone Wand for, you know, particular phallic reasons. And a lot of people will choose to get those cards altered. And the foil versions of those cards fetch a slight premium because of, you know, this. And Oath of the Ancient Wood seems like it'll be a great addition to this collection. Because the moment you click on it and you see the picture, I think you'll understand why. I won't spoil it on the cast, but the man is definitely in a position to have something drawn on him.
So right now we have the German version. It's Eides Uralten Waldes. I think Waldes is forests, right? But it could be wood, too. I don't know.
You're the only one who would even possibly know.
Yeah, it's true.
So we'll believe whatever you say.
The world's largest Armando worm is going to be coming out of this, guys.
right. Sure. Yeah. If anyone cares about that, and you know you want penises on your cards, go for it.
Yeah.
Well, now that we've talked about, you know, Ryan's ancient wood, I guess we have nothing else to talk about this week. Just let everyone go home thinking about that.
Yeah, we're not proud of that aspect of our community, but I think we would be remiss if we didn't at least mention it.
I like that you use the word remiss, and I agree.
Would you call it shamblewood?
No, I don't actually like these kind of cards. I don't collect them. I think it's ridiculous.
I think shamblewood's an actual thing. Like all Ryan Block's wearing this track
pants. As part of what I've noticed with these kind of cards is the foils end up going for a slight premium because people take them to get first.
Ryan goes, I'm not excited about this card. He says, I don't like these cards. Right after he goes, this is the card I'm most excited about.
I think
two things happen in that order.
It's the card that is the most sleeper-like in the format, because, like, it's one of those things, unless you know that community is out there who does that on the cards.
He said like, excited.
My old roommate actually made the price of Nightmare go up for the same reason. He used to buy them and draw dicks on them. Like, he just has a binder full of, like, 300
Nightmares. Oh, my God. This is the most pointless conversation we've ever had on this cast.
It's true. I mean, well, yeah, but see, like, we can't completely go away from... Mevy Meta. We have to wean ourselves off, so... This is our Mevy Meta segment for the week.
I'm not proud of us this week, fellas.
You're never proud of us.
Oh, I forgot a card that I liked. From EVO Bounty. That's the actual card.
All right, let's talk about it. That's anything to not talk about, right?
Primeval Bounty or...
Oh, yeah, Primeval Bounty.
It sounds like you said Remedial Bounty.
Remedial Bounty. We are Remedial.
Six mana, five colorless, one green. Enchantment. Whenever you cast a creature spell, put a 3/3 beast token onto the battlefield. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put 3/1/1 counters on target creature you control. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 3 life. I think it could have some EDH play, and that's pretty much it. Maybe some...
Play this in Duels of the Planeswalker. This card has so much value. It's do nothing enchantment, and then all of a sudden it does a whole lot.
Next time we play Duel of the Planeswalkers Limited, this is first pick. Except we can't because you only get 3 free drafts, and then you have to pay $2, and Marcel puts his fist through his computer.
That was the worst. Yes, and you get 2 drafts. Oh, they're sealed. So, yeah, I'm going to rant about this.
Do it. Do it up.
Wait, what is this? I haven't heard about this yet. Tell me.
Yeah, so Duels of the Planeswalker, you know, the new one is actually kind of cool. You know, you play it, it gets there for new players, and, you know, you get through it and everything, and you finally find something cool for an advanced player. It's a sealed. And basically, they do a sealed event, and you get there. They got a pool of 180 cards, and you pick your cards, and you build your decks, and you go through it, and you get a pack every 2 opponents, and then you take from that pack, and you build your seal, your pool again. And so you making your decks cool. So after about 6 rounds, then you're done. You go through 100%. You can rebuild your pool or whatever. So, you know, you do that. It takes about like 1 hour or 2. And so you do that twice, and then you try to do it for the third time. It said, yeah, you got to pay $2 so that you play another seal pool. And I'm just like,
Oh, that's so greedy.
Do you get anything for these sealed pools?
Nothing. You just play it.
Microtransactions are the name of the game in gaming these days.
I mean, I could understand why they do it, but the $2 is expensive. Or if anything, like, I would buy a separate program just to do the sealed and not to play any of the other duels of the Planeswalkers. Or there may be 50 cents. I might do a couple of them, but I mean, I think it's just a major fail. I'm sure I understand why they're doing the main transaction. I understand business-wise it may be correct for them to do it, but it's just, it completely turned me off.
Hey, what platform do I need to buy the game on to get that scavenging ooze?
I think Steam or iPad or whatever.
Not PlayStation? That's too bad, because I'm going to buy it for PlayStation.
Oh, you're not getting the scavenging ooze.
I bought last year's, and then I forgot to turn in the code, and I didn't even get my promo.
Oh, man, you could have got a Vampire Nocturnus or some manner of Hydra.
I still think that Nocturnus is going to rebound.
Yeah. You think that.
I mean, they're already on buy list for like $4.
How far is this your next Merfolk?
It used to be a $20 card. I mean,
it's not going to be that much for a coin.
No, it won't be, but it'll be 10 again.
When?
The next block they do that focuses on vampires and it spikes like Lord of the Undead did. Like,
so never.
Okay, you're right. There'll probably never be vampires again.
All right, well, this is the end of the cast. Let's say, shut up, Corbin.
Yeah, great.
He doesn't like that anymore.
I feel like Vampire Nocturnus is a very good pick. I feel like pooping on that is wrong.
Fine, that can be your pick of the week next week. Pretend we didn't remember.
Let's congratulate Corbin, actually, for doing number 24 out of 4,500. I don't think he's got his kudos for that yet.
Not on the cast, no.
No, we're still on the cast.
It was fun.
Good job, Corbin, but it doesn't give me much faith in this game.
Yeah, that's okay.
Wow, he was actually Corbin did well, so magic must be bad.
He was actually one game away from being on the Pro Tour, right?
Yeah, I was one game away from being on the Pro Tour because I went X2-1. I don't know. I'm 2-0 against Ryan Lifetime, including beating him last week in Vegas. So,
and I'm very terrible now, so it's fun. Yeah. I have to be admitting that.
So
I'm
Jason,
still excited about Modern, though.
So you're going to take him up on this Merfolk versus Sliver deck? Who's going
to
really...
I would actually prefer to take him up on Merfolk versus Illusions. I'm pretty sure I win that matchup.
It's not about the decks playing each other. It's about who would do better in an event.
Illusions.
Okay, well, you can play Illusions. Jason can play Slivers. I'll play Merfolk.
Okay.
Is there any way I could win this bet without having to play Magic?
This sounds miserable.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of my feeling, too.
Alright, well, fine. Like, you guys are boring.
A challenge what if I don't like the deck and then I'm stuck playing it just to prove Corbin wrong?
I mean, I'll play. I'll hate fuck myself with Magic to prove to win fast.
This is so stupid. We're like forcing ourselves into a challenge that none of us want to participate in.
That's fine. No, I want to participate to win. I don't even care. We're betting something, so I feel like...
You're bad at betting, Ryan. I can't believe you didn't say you had to buy Fogo for all of us.
No, I'm not letting you win anything that you didn't earn. Screw you. I won Fogo.
Man, you can Fogo.
All right, this is degenerated into terribleness. We'll catch you guys next week, Brooke.
None of this has been recording.
Everyone on this cast likes each other, I promise.
Sometimes.
Until we have to ride in a car with each other cross-country, and then we kind of don't.
'Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.